Pants Blacker, Gold Pants Blacker, Gold Pants Blacker, Gold Pants
Podcast, Podcast, Podcast.
Blacker, Gold Pants Blacker, Gold Pants Blacker, Gold Pants Blacker, Gold Pants
Podcast, 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 Podcast. Podcast, Podcast, Podcast.
Black Heart Gold Podcast, episode 31, the season 2 premiere. So this one will go in the record books as 2-1. Yeah, why not? Hawkeye State, joining you live from lovely Waukee, Iowa. Joined, as always, by Adam Jacoby, formerly was Power Surprise. Adam, what's up?
Not a whole lot, man. But technically, this isn't live, right? Like, this is going to be on a delay.
It's live when I'm saying it. It's not going to be live when they listen to it.
Fair enough. Then I withdraw all objections.
Yeah, thanks, counselor.
How are you, man?
I'm fantastic. I'm enjoying a cool Coors Light, the beer of champions. Morehouse is spinning over in his proverbial grave right now with that sound, as if he actually listens to this thing anyway.
It could be worse. You could be enjoying a refreshing white Franzia.
Who says I'm not? Speaking of which, what are you drinking?
Refreshing white Franzia.
Nice, classy.
It was in the fridge. It was within reach. What am I gonna do?
Is it a Chablis?
No, they don't use wine names. It's literally called refreshing white.
They used to use wine names because they had Chablis, and then we would always refer to it as Chablis because it came from the box.
I think they're too upset with people calling him Chablis and Merlot, and they're like, you know what? Fuck it. Red and white. That's
there we
it.
Go. Hey, we have a guest. We probably should bring him in. Break up our discussion of bad alcohol. We're joined for the season 2 premiere by the most dangerous Big Ten blogger out there, Tom Fornelli, the man behind Blog 10, also a contributor at Foul Balls and at AOL Fan House. Tom and I and Jacoby spent way too much time in Chicago back in June getting just shit-faced drunk. And this is the first time we've been able to talk since then. Tom, how you doing?
I'm great. Still hungover from June.
That makes three of us.
Yeah.
And refreshing white really is the best Franzia.
Well, I'm glad I'm drinking relative greatness then.
I got to say, I'm preferential to the delicious red myself. But
not the chillable red?
That one's also excellent. Which is, a chillable red is just wrong on so many levels.
Right, right. It's about as wrong as fuckable pet. Like, no.
Wow, and we're off to a hell of a start already.
That is a great way to start the second season.
I'm not going to lie to you guys. When I was in college in Iowa, I had a box of wine and cheese party at my apartment.
I thought you were going to
fuckable pet party. Well, you got there eventually.
I really thought you were going there too.
You have enough delicious red, and fuckable pet party happens. Believe me. I've been there. I was in a fraternity. I wasn't actually in a fraternity.
Yeah, no, you weren't.
No.
Anyway.
But you were having a party in a fraternity.
Yes, I once went to a party at a fraternity, and, you know, there were pets, and they look
like guys fuck their pets all the time.
Right, because the pets are, like, you know, freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
And
you notice how we want to fuck guys in frats.
I have noticed that. And we've already derailed. So.
Completely.
Let's talk about football, because it's been a long time since we've actually been able to talk about football and have it, like, you know, within striking distance. Big Ten Media Days are, I believe, the 3rd and the 4th of August. Bob Zook has fired up the El Camino. He's put a new battery and a couple spark plugs in that bastard, and he's on his way up, hoping to get 5 minutes with his soon-to-be-fired brother, Ron. Who's your pick? Just let's get out of the way right off the bat. Who's your pick to win it all this year?
To win the conference? Ohio State, I think, is a pretty obvious choice.
Yeah, it's too obvious. I'm sorry, I have to disagree with you.
Yeah, so I'm just going to, since that's obvious, I'm going to pick Indiana.
There you go. Get out on a limb there, Corso.
Yeah, well, you know. I'm right, I look like a genius. If I'm wrong, nobody cares.
I think it's Tom Crean's ear.
Jacoby, who you got?
Well, since we're going to call everyone who picks Ohio State an asshole, I think I'll be that asshole and pick Ohio State anyway.
Well, you know, you're going to have to go start writing a Buckeye battle cry now. I'm sorry.
If you, I'm good enough.
Yeah. You and Seaman. That's right. His name is Seaman.
Yeah. Doesn't he have, like, other people who, like, write with him, which is really weird?
He did for that minute and a half that he was on SBN, but I think that might be gone by now.
Okay.
Do we have an SBN Ohio State blog yet?
I don't know. I think no.
Okay. Well, anyway, you can start writing it.
Yeah. See what happens when they give me the Ohio State blog.
And all hell breaks loose. I'm taking Wisconsin.
Ooh.
Yeah. I was going to take Iowa, but I'm going to take Wisconsin. That offensive line's too damn good. They're just going to run the ball nonstop, and Tolzien will throw an occasional screen pass, and bada bing, bada boom, go Badgers.
You think their defense is good enough?
I think their defense is solid, if unspectacular. I think the ball control is just going to be ridiculous, and I hate to do it because Bielema is such a terrible game coach, but I think it's autopilot this year for them almost.
Yeah.
Plus, they've got the exclusively named Monty Hall. Monty Ball, excuse me. Monty Hall was the listening to the deal guy. Monty Ball is the halfback. All right, with that out of the way, let's talk Iowa.
Okay.
Jacoby and Tom and me, I guess I'm involved in this conversation. Where do we see Iowa finishing this season? Jacoby, you first.
Me first. Okay. I got to think second place. I think it comes down to Iowa and Ohio State again, except it's going to be in Kinnick, and maybe it even goes down to overtime again. But, God, Ohio State brings back just a ton of talent, and I'm not really sure if the Iowa offensive line can keep Stansy off his ass for 60 minutes or at the very least long enough to put up enough points to, you know, stay within striking distance of the Buckeyes for the end. Their defense is just too good. Cam Hayward is going to run roughshod over everybody not named Riley Reiff. And, that said, all the tough games are at home and all the simple games are on the road. They might do something stupid like drop one to Indiana, but the good news is that offensive line aside, this Iowa team is really talented, and they certainly look like the type of team that can put together 6 or 7 wins over the course of the conference slate.
Tom, what do you think? As the objective observer here.
As the objective observer, well, I agree with a lot of what Adam said. I think third. I think they'll finish behind Ohio State and Wisconsin. Just because, I mean, they have that easy schedule as far as they get Penn State, Ohio State, and Wisconsin all at home. But, I mean, I think they'll lose both the Ohio State and Wisconsin game just for the same reason you were saying with the offensive line. I don't know how much time Stansy's going to have this year, and with his propensity to just chuck the ball, I think he could throw some pretty bad interceptions this year, so they won't be able to overcome it with the backbreakers in those games. I just see it happening.
Yeah, it's the thing that worries me the most, too, and I take a little bit of solace in the fact that it doesn't seem to be worrying the coaching staff that much. Usually, they're pretty easy to read that if there's a real problem out there, you can pretty much figure out what the problem is, and they're so obsessed with finding a second tight end, which is so prototypical of Iowa that the tight end 2 spot is very important to our entire existence as a football team. But with that said, yeah, I mean, none of those guys, you know, aside from Reiff, really truly impressed me last year, and a few of them didn't play at all. So, if there's and there's always the issue of, you know, who's backing up these guys too, and there are more spots on this team that are the thin layer of talent that is Iowa football this year than there has been in quite a while. The more I do assume the position, the more I think, linebacker, we're two injuries away from Bruce Davis, and that terrifies me. You look at quarterback, Vandenberg, aside from the Ohio State game, really didn't do a whole lot to impress me last year. And there's nobody behind him. There's a ton of halfbacks, a ton of receivers, but, the offensive line is basically two guys who've played extensively and, kind of fill in parts otherwise. And if either of the experienced linemen go down, hell follows with it. The defensive line is really four deep. I mean, maybe five if you consider Mike Daniels or LeBron Daniel, but it's really, we're one injury there away from having trouble. And the secondary is, aside from the safeties, the two starting safeties, there's not a whole lot behind them. Prater should be fine at corner, but, finding somebody to fill in the other corner spot, and heaven forbid somebody get hurt back there, especially at safety, there's nothing stopping the free fall after that. And as we all know with Iowa, there's going to be injuries. It's a question of when and where.
The way things went last year, how everything went in Iowa's favor, it seemed, except for the Stanzi injury at the end of the year, it's like you figure karma's got to have something coming back this year, too.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of that, I guess. I don't know. I think that it was almost – last year was almost a correction from the year and a half prior when they would lose every close game, Illinois and Pitt and Michigan State the year before.
Cyclical, basically.
Sure.
Or if not cyclical, at least more random than we want to give it any credit for.
Right. Well, and I think, the interception and the turnover bug, as Phil Steele is always one to point out, always kind of flips a little bit. And it seemed that so often last year, Iowa's takeaways, like ping pong ball game and Arnaud basically throwing bombs to Tyler Sash, were in many ways either a product of the other team being awful or fluky, whereas ours seem to be Stanzi related so often that it's hard to say that we can't really, we could improve, but it's a question of just how much. I got Iowa finishing third in the conference right now, mostly because of the offensive line and mostly because when there are injuries, it's going to be really, really tough for this team to compete. And the tough games, especially Ohio State, even Wisconsin is the last week of October. Those games are coming late enough in the year that if there are injuries, that could really be a problem. Looking at the schedule right now, though, I just realized this, and this is kind of sad for a guy who actually just wrote 16 pages about the Ohio State schedule for a yearbook thing, but Ohio State's got Wisconsin and Iowa back-to-back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's not easy. Especially that wasn't right. That's incorrect. Wisconsin has Ohio State and Iowa back-to-back. I'm not reading it right. That might not be the easiest stretch of games, especially when they're coming off of the Minnesota Golden Gophers at home the week before.
And homecoming probably be a little buzz.
Yeah, a little bit. Let's talk Wolverines, or as we call them, Lulverines.
Okay. If I might interject.
Sure.
I've always pronounced it as lol, like a short O in LOL. Is it a long O? Is it lol or is it lol?
I've always used the long O.
Yeah.
Isn't lolcats funnier than lolcats? Isn't lol the guy from Wings? Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. And he's funny, so therefore it's lol.
Damn it.
And we've once again got off the tracks. Let's talk Wolverines, because they really – this is going to be an interesting year for Michigan. I find this team fascinating. They don't really know who's going to play quarterback. Their defense is still coached by Greg Robinson. Their coach could very well be on the verge of getting canned. They've got kind of odd stuff floating around the program from the investigation over summertime practice hours and all that. What the hell happens to Michigan this year, Jacoby?
Oh, your guess is as good as mine. They could they could go anywhere from 1-7 to 7-1 this year. You said that they don't know who's going to play quarterback, but it's not because both of the guys suck. You know, it's not a Threat and God, who's the other guy with Threat? Sheridan. Yeah.
Sheridath? David Cohn?
Yeah, exactly. It's not that kind of a situation. Like, the only reason that there's a controversy is that Denardin looks even better than last year. And that's a scary thing. Like, it looks like they have two starting quality quarterbacks. It's just that they play such divergent styles that committing to one or the other, might not suit their best interest, you know, especially, like, you don't want to switch quarterbacks game to game, but, you know, if it makes the most sense from a tactical standpoint, might not hurt to do that, or at the very least, adopt like a, was it 97 when Ohio State had Stanley Jackson and Joe Germain?
Wow, well played.
Yeah, well, but, you know, it was that same thing, you know. Which one was the fast one? Was it Jackson?
It certainly wasn't Germain.
Yeah. Wasn't Germain.
Oh, okay.
Germain had all the maneuverability of Drew Bledsoe.
Yeah.
And not Drew Bledsoe like when he was playing. I mean, Drew Bledsoe now.
Drew bled so much he needed a transfusion.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, they're going to need to do that. Losing Donovan Warren hurt just as much as losing the defensive end, Brandon Graham, because, you know, it's not like they have a ton of talent at cornerback to begin with. That unit was getting blown up way worse than the defensive line was when those guys were both there last year. So, you know, maybe Michigan has a talent for the 35-31 shootouts. You know, maybe they've got the talent to win them. Maybe they don't. There's certainly going to be exciting games in Michigan. But, I really don't know how well they're going to do at all. Mr. Fornelli, what do you think?
I was just looking at their schedule. I'd say in conference, I'd say 4-4 at best and probably 3-5.
Yeah.
For a lot of the same reasons, because they are the two quarterbacks are going to be fun to watch no matter which one's on the field and how they decide to use them. But that defense, they are going to have to score 40 points a game to really win.
Yeah, I think there's enough about that. It's amazing just how bad they've been on defense for three straight years now. And I don't know if Gerg is really the guy you go to as an answer. But I'm looking at the schedule right with you, Tom, and you know, they've got the bad part for them is they get Iowa, Penn State, Wisconsin, and Ohio State, and not only that, but they get Iowa, Penn State back to back, followed by two normal conference games, and then they finish with Wisconsin and Ohio State back to back. Not only are you getting the four best teams in the conference, but you're getting all four of them in clumps. And that's certainly not going to help matters for them. They do avoid Northwestern.
Thank God.
Yes. But on the other hand,
you could see them beating Iowa, though, couldn't you? Theoretically?
Sure, I could see them. After watching last year's game, I absolutely could see them beating Iowa, especially at Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
But I also could see them losing to Purdue. And I could definitely see them losing to Michigan State, even at home. So, yeah, I think 3-5 is pretty reasonable. I mean, they don't have Minnesota, they don't have Northwestern, but... And they're going to beat Illinois. They're going to beat Indiana. I think Purdue and Michigan State are probably toss-ups for them. And then I'm going to chalk the next four up as losses, but they could pick off one of those. 3-5, 4-4. I'd say 3-5 is probably more likely. And their non-conference ain't easy. I mean, yeah, they got Massachusetts and Bowling Green. Those are wins, you'd think. Well, Toledo would say otherwise. And Appalachian State, baby. Yeah! But they got Connecticut, and they go to... Notre Dame. I mean, that's not a cakewalk. They're the only from what Cook said today. I haven't had a chance to review to see if it's actually true, but I'm assuming it is. They're the only Big Ten team playing two BCS non-conference games other than Iowa, and one of Iowa's is Iowa State.
That doesn't count. Eighth grade Warren doesn't even know they exist.
Yeah,
exactly.
Although to be fair, Iowa State's program is a lot older than Connecticut's.
So you're playing the seniority card, and that's about it.
What else can you do if you're Iowa State?
Yeah, that's true. So let's say our Rod goes 7-5 with that, goes to a bowl game. Does the bowl game decide whether or not he keeps his job?
Oh, Tom, what do you think?
7-5, no. I'd say he'd have to win 8 games, really. It'd have to be like one of the mid-tier, like Capital One style bowl games, not the Alamo Bowl or the Motor City Bowl or the Caesar's Pizza Bowl. That's not going to save his job.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think it's got to get to 8-4. I mean, I think you almost have to run the table in the non-conference and split the conference slate, get to 8-4, and you know that one of those Florida Bowls, whether it's the Gator, I think, doesn't the Gator thing start this year?
Is it going back to Gator?
Well, I think the Gator Bowl Big Ten tie-in starts this season because they just went to Big Ten ACC again. And so there's 3 New Year's Day Florida Bowls, the Big Ten's in against SEC teams. And I'm sure one of them is going to take Michigan if they're 8-4.
Sure.
And if you go down there and win that game, you're definitely fine because you got 9 wins. Even if you lose that game, you might be okay. I don't know if the bowl game's ever going to really make a difference if it's the kind of bowl game that Michigan is expecting to be in.
And doesn't it also sort of depend on how they close out the season, like whether they're competitive against Ohio State and, you know, if they beat, you know, an Iowa or Michigan State or, I guess Michigan State less so, but, or Penn State or Wisconsin. Like, if they have high-profile wins, don't you think that matters more than, you know, skewing towards the Vegas line and winning all 7 games that you're favored in or whatever?
Yeah, I think that's probably part of it. I think if they picked off one of the 4 top teams in the conference and they played tough against Ohio State, he's probably okay. If he beats Ohio State, I think what they do,
yeah,
he's
yeah,
in,
that's
safe.
That's a 5-year extension,
right?
Everyone's
yeah,
11.
Yeah, they could be 1-10, and if they go to the horseshoe and get the 1 win there, he's safe.
So they turn into the Iowa State of the Big Ten. Did you know Rodriguez is Spanish for McCarney?
All right. Well, one of those 4 teams that we discussed is a potential stumbling block for Michigan's the lovely Nittany Lions of Penn State, pwned as always by Iowa, but Penn State to everybody else. And Penn State returns a lot, and they kind of got to revamp the offensive line again for the second straight year, and they got to find a quarterback. Tom, does Penn State really need a kind of Darrell Clark-esque quarterback in order to be competitive in the Big Ten this year, or can they simply just turn around and hand the ball to Royster and see what happens?
I mean, they're going to be competitive, but without Clark or whoever it ends up being, Newsom or the McGloin kid, and plus with their schedule, I don't see them being really competitive. I have them at 4th or 5th in the conference this year. I mean, it's going to be Evan Royster every week, every play, and just hope the quarterback doesn't make a mistake. But
well, you could do a lot worse than that, though, right?
Yeah, you could. That's better than half the conference, but still, I mean, they play at Alabama in the second week of the season, and they go to Iowa, they go to Ohio State. It'll be a down year for Penn State, but by down year, I mean like 4.
Mm-hmm.
Jacoby, what do you think?
Well, I think it comes down to how their quarterback play is. I mean, you know what you're going to get from Royster, and you know it's not like they don't have any talent at receiver or at offensive line. You know, Wisniewski's still there. So if this Newsom kid ends up being, you know, living up to his 4 stars, you know, even as a redshirt freshman, you know. You know, we've seen what happens when 4-star redshirt freshman kids get put into bad situations. They're called Jake Christensen, and it screws them up for the rest of their college career. But I don't think it's going to be that bad in Penn State. And so if Newsom can perform, you know, he doesn't have to work miracles, but you know, if he's as talented as people say they are, or say that he is, then Penn State's probably going to be in decent shape. I don't think they win at Kinnick, but, you know, fourth or fifth seems almost to be like the bottom end of the plausible scenarios for their season.
Well, I think the Big Ten is incredibly top-heavy this year. Mm-hmm. Much like last year, I think there's probably four, and yeah, maybe five. Maybe Michigan State or Purdue jumps in there. I don't think Purdue's got the guns quite yet, but it's a possibility. Those teams are pretty clearly at the top, and the rest of it's going to kind of sort itself out toward the bottom. But the one thing I think that Penn State fans are genuinely worried about, and I think rightfully so given the track record, is that Newsom basically becomes Morelli. And he's shoved into a situation where he's not ready to go, and the hype basically, you know, envelops the entire operation, and it turns into a disaster.
But he's not that hype, though.
He's a four-star. He was a Michigan. You know, Michigan was after him late, and you know, Penn State held on for dear life and got a letter out of him. I think he's been seen by many. Probably not from the more reasonable there. You don't see Black Shoe Diaries do this, but
right.
I think a lot of people there see him as the natural progression of Darrell Clark, and that he should be stepping in on day one and be able to do that. And I think that's completely unreasonable given the fact he's a redshirt freshman who's, you know, essentially taking the reins of this thing with a brand new line in front of him.
What worries me was like what Jacoby was saying about the Christensen syndrome. Being the redshirt freshman coming in, he's got his first game, he'll be playing Youngstown State, which, you know, he'll be out by the end of the third quarter probably. But then having to go to Alabama in his second game as a starter,
yeah,
seems one of those games that could crush him. He might not be right for the rest of the year, and that's what worries me.
Yeah, I think it's a very legitimate concern to have. And I think especially, I mean, yeah, they coached Clark into a pretty legitimate quarterback. He was, you know, solid if unspectacular at times, and he made some plays every once in a while that really made you take notice. But, you know, how often have we seen, you know, the Paternos do this? Mm-hmm. How often have we, and on the flip side, how often have we seen somebody who has come in, you know, with four-star, five-star hype and kind of fold under the pressure of 107,000 in Happy Valley?
Yeah, I mean, the track record for four- and five-star quarterbacks is, if you go back and look at the recruiting rankings, way worse than you would expect. It's less than 50% of the four- and five-star guys end up being, you know, good, high-level quarterbacks. Some of them never even start. Now, I don't want to read too much into the Penn State-Alabama game, though. If you think back to 2004, Drew Tate's third game under center, he went over to Arizona State and got absolutely hammered. It was, you know, Iowa lost 44-7, and that seven was off of a punt return late in the fourth quarter. Like, Drew Tate put together one of the worst performances by any Iowa quarterback ever. But then, you know, he did decently against Michigan, and then Iowa didn't lose for the rest of the year. So, you know, I don't think it's one game that ruins a quarterback. I think it's one bad season, you know, under one bad line. Then, you know, that sort of messes with his timing long term and sort of gets him out of his comfort zone.
Well, go ahead, Tom.
That's a fair point, too. And the good news is even if he does get destroyed in the Bama game, I mean, he has Kent State and Temple up the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Before heading to Iowa to get it destroyed once more.
By the way, the story of the week is the offensive lineman with the picture of Adrian Claiborne on his phone, just so we can keep tabs of where he is.
Always watching.
Always, yeah. Claiborne always looking at you. I might do that myself just to see, you know, how it feels. All right, well, I want to talk about one more team that is near in location to Tom and dear to the hearts of all of us. That's right, the Northwestern Wildcats.
Just Northwestern.
Just Northwestern. It's just Northwestern week on the Big Ten Network.
Northwestern week.
What's that?
I've been enjoying you guys on Twitter with the Just Northwestern.
Northwestern week only lasts 9 hours. But this is a scary thing. And Jacoby, I know you're going to say that this is completely ridiculous, but bear me out here. Northwestern starts. Yeah. Northwestern starts with Vanderbilt at Vanderbilt, who doesn't have a coach.
Yeah.
They got Illinois State. They go to Rice. They got Central Michigan without Lefevre.
Wait. They have a road game at Rice?
At Rice, that's right. They scheduled a home-and-home with the Rice Owls.
And you know what? Rice might beat them in attendance.
Oh, that's almost certain to happen. All right. After that, they go to Corporate Bank Stadium in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
They get Purdue at home. They get Michigan State at home. And then they go to Indiana. Eight eminently winnable games, and that's the end of October.
Yeah, they might be 8-0.
They could be 8-0 head to Happy Valley.
A good team would go 8-0 against that schedule. Yes.
Yeah, and they're not. And they're not bad. They're not great. They're not bad.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, there's a decent chance that we could see Iowa Northwestern at the decrepit shithole stadium of theirs with both teams at like 8-1.
Big bet on the line.
It could be like a legitimately important game in the conference, which would be incredible. Northwestern misses Michigan and Ohio State this year. They've got a halfway decent chance of going 5-3 in the conference or 6-2 in the conference and really playing a part in getting this thing done. And I can't believe I'm actually saying that.
What is it with teams missing Michigan and Ohio State? Don't you think that happens just a little too frequently for it just to be random chance?
It happens to Iowa all the time. That's the weird thing.
It happened to Iowa, Purdue, now Northwestern.
But isn't the last time Northwestern went to the Rose Bowl, wasn't that year the same year they also missed Ohio State and Michigan in the schedule?
I'm pretty sure that's right, yeah.
Let me double check.
Write it down. I mean, pick Northwest at Indiana.
You know, that's the scary thing. They've got a legitimate chance of going 6-2 in the conference, and with that non-conference, they could win 10 games. They could very easily win 10 games this year, and that's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Because a 10-win Northwestern means the end times are here. Like, locusts come flying out of the sky, and all the volcanoes go off, and we all fall into the ocean.
And Nebraska says, we're staying in the Big 12.
Yeah.
The only time Northwestern went to the Rose Bowl when the Big 10 has been the Big 10 was in 1995. They missed Ohio State and Michigan State.
Ah.
Oh, okay.
But they did lose the team from Indiana. Yeah, they did. They won 1913. They did lose to Miami of Ohio, though. So... they haven't come out of Ohio unblemished yet.
I tell you what, I look at that schedule. First off, I don't know how the hell they even have four road games. I mean, they got Minnesota and Indiana on the road, which are two winnable games. They go to Wisconsin, which they'll lose. They'll go to Penn State, which they'll probably lose.
Mm-hmm.
But their home games, I mean, we all know how they play against Iowa. Illinois, high school teams could beat Illinois this year. And Northwestern is basically just that. Michigan State and Purdue are at home, I think, winnable games for them, and their non-conference is that easy. A 10-2 Northwestern is completely within reach, and I can't believe I'm saying it.
And a 10-2 Northwestern would get hammered in a bowl game. They might lose by 70.
Well, that's the thing, is that if things play out as we think they might, and it's a pretty top-heavy conference, and we end up with, let's say, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Iowa, Northwestern. And if Ohio State and Wisconsin both have 11 wins, they're probably both going BCS, which means Iowa would be cap one. Northwestern would probably go back to the Outback or would go to the Gator if Outback didn't want them back for another year. And they would get crucified by anybody from the SEC.
Yes.
I love it. It's July and we're talking about bowl selection.
But I've also noticed that usually whenever teams miss Ohio State and Michigan and everyone starts penciling them into higher bowls just basically because of the schedule, the easy schedule, but
that never works out.
Yeah, but ignoring how good the team actually is, then, you know, that team usually still figures out a way to lose four or five games over the course of the year. Like,
yeah.
like, remember when Purdue was getting, like, top five votes just because of the schedule? And I'm not even sure they went to a bowl game that year. So, I mean, the universe is going to unfold as it should on this one. If Northwestern's terrible, I don't think they're terrible this year. But, you know, if they're secretly a 6-6 or 7-5 team, they're going to find a way to still go 6-6 or 7-5. Maybe 8-4 because of the schedule. But, I mean,
I tell you, if they find a quarterback, and I'm assuming it's Purse. I haven't looked at Northwestern that tough this year, to be completely honest. But I'm assuming Purse is the guy who's going to probably end up a quarterback. If they find a quarterback and they can get a bit of a pass rush going, the rest of that defense is pretty solid. I can see it happening. I mean, yeah, and you're right.
Markhausen.
What's that?
How do you replace Zeke Markhausen?
You can't. You don't.
How do you replace the pure cheap shot power that is Corey Wooten?
No, but Wooten wasn't the guy that really screwed up Stancy. That was the guy that wasn't it a defensive tackle that
the fat tackle.
Came across his face and grabbed his face mask and twisted him while he was going down. Wooten was just making a tackle. He wasn't doing anything cheap in any way. It was that uncalled.
Shut up, Jacoby. It was a cheap shot.
Well, no, but hey, you should be agreeing with me, because if that tackle's back, then they're still dirty and we still have an excuse.
Wasn't it Corbin Bryant?
It was Wooten who got to him.
Yeah.
Bryant might have been the one who grabbed the face mask.
Yeah, I think it was the face mask and the twist that fucked him up. Well, is that
I'm pretty sure? I'm pretty sure it was Brennan Kugel. Kugel couldn't get his arms down long enough, or far enough to reach the face mask. All right, well, that's kind of a brief overview of the Big Ten, and it's really early in the year, and we could probably talk about that for another 2 hours. But there's far more important things, because Mad Men's coming back in like 2 weeks. And
yes.
So if you guys don't like Mad Men who are listening to this, feel free to shut it off now, because we're done talking about football. We're talking about Mad Men now.
They probably would have shut it down right after the theme song if they don't like Mad Men. They're like, ah, damn it.
Mad Men has infiltrated everything. Jacoby, Mad Men, go.
So excited. Very happy. I've been watching the those marathons, the season recap marathons with Matthew Wiener.
It's Weiner.
Wiener.
Wiener?
Wiener!
I don't even know her. All right.
I'm glad that our Mad Men discussion got off. Well,
like every house, it takes 30 seconds before we start talking about dick.
I'm most looking forward to the return of course, Roger Sterling.
Yes, my man.
And isn't he an Iowan by birth, John Slattery?
I'm gonna go ahead and say yes. I don't know. I haven't looked it up. I haven't like Google stalked him at all.
He was. Yeah. I thought you were the one that told me that. I hope I'm right, because otherwise I'm making something up about a great, great man.
John Slattery was born and raised in Boston, Massachusetts. So now,
God damn it!
Which is a lot like Iowa.
Oh.
One of the Mad Men guys was from Iowa. Anyway.
So what happens here? I mean, the shackles are taken off of Draper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no longer does he have to be clandestine in the way that he's out, pulling tail.
Mm-hmm.
So does all hell break loose?
Yeah, although I think that we're going to see some more cracks in the armor, that he's going to be more unable to handle the changing world around him than he was even in 62. And that Betty and the kids provided more stability than he ever wanted to admit. That's the direction I think they're going to go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Fernelli, what do you think?
I was about to say the same thing.
That's
dick.
There will definitely be a lot more finger banging probably in the first 3 or 4 episodes. And then he'll have that epiphany where he realizes he actually misses his wife and kids. And then, of course, the past will come back to haunt him.
Well, I think they're setting up something very interesting here, because it used to be that you know, at least in demeanor, Sterling was kind of the skirt chaser, and Draper, you know, did fine on his own, but he wasn't out actively like he wasn't flaunting it, you know.
Yeah.
Now Sterling has the hot 20-something wife, who there's some problems there to be sure, but you know, the hot 20-something wife, and now Draper's the one who's going to be out running around like a crazy bastard. And I think it could end with you know, Sterling being the serious, studious type, telling him to get his ass, you know, get his act together, while Draper does the "you're acting a fool" routine.
Could definitely.
Or it could just be, or it could just be that Sterling will have 3 one-liners to show that crack me up, and
and then he has a heart attack again.
He's protecting,
yeah.
Then you get scared. Somewhere in between all the finger-banging and the skirt-chasing and the loving his family again, they run a new advertising company.
Yeah, which is going to be really boring.
Yeah, exactly. Except for when Christina Hendricks is on the screen walking around the office and the rest of it, throw it away.
Right. Well,
don't you think it would be kind of weird if, like, their new company sucks? And, like, they can't get any new accounts, and then all of a sudden they have to confront the fact that they suck all of a sudden?
Well, and that might be what they're going for. I mean, it could be that, you know, there was that theme throughout, especially season 2 and season 3, where, you know, like, they had the poster where the water is rising on Draper and he's sitting there drinking a cocktail. you know, that maybe, you know, they've broken away thinking that they can take this old school advertising, you know, knowledge with them and turn it into a successful company. And it might be the world's pass to buy. You know, everybody wants the Volkswagen ad instead of the, you know, the carousel. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Or German driving cars.
Or there could just be some more finger banging.
What if they took it in just this completely reprehensible direction where, like, where the detestable Pete Campbell or Peggy starts suggesting things that are clearly takeoffs on bad ads from today, and then all of the people in the office are like, no, no, terrible idea. Like if she said, like, what about gerbils driving cars? No, no, no. And they just do that for 60 minutes. It would definitely be their last season, but I think it would be memorable in its own way.
Well, the good news is it's not going to be ending now. I mean, like, they've Weiner has said that they're going to – his goal is to continue it through 1970. And they're at, what, 63 right now? So if they went to, like, 65 this year – or they might not even do that. They might just go straight to 64 because they want to show the startup of the new company, I guess. I don't know. But it means you're going to probably get at least 3 or 4 more years out of it, which would be awesome because – fortunately, I need something for my Sunday nights. I don't really watch so much pro football anymore.
Yeah, I think we can't leave this topic without everybody answering, which Mad Men character are you most like?
Fernelli, I'll give it to you first.
I would love to say Draper, but that's so not true. What's his name? The dude with the glasses that's always screwing up. The head of the TV department.
Oh, Harry Crane.
There we go, Crane.
Yeah. Jacoby, what do you think?
See, I think we're all in the same boat that we want to say Draper, even though it's not true. And, like, I also want to say, you know, Roger, but again, completely not true. So I really wish I'd thought of this. what about, like, oh, you know what? I think it's Sally Draper. Precocious, but still completely childish, and reminding you of that fact every week. Yes, I think I wonder what people would react like if I, like, changed my Twitter avatar to Sally.
Sally Draper. I think you should try it and see what happens.
I think I will. I think as soon as this podcast goes up, icon's getting changed without any fanfare.
People are going to go crazy. Remember the last time you changed your Twitter avatar and all broke loose?
No, bring back the Lehman! No! Dicks.
Well, I would not really say Draper. I enjoy watching Don Draper, but I don't think I'd ever want to really be Don Draper. I would totally say Sterling, but aside from occasionally saying something that's incredibly smart-ass just for the sake of saying it, I don't think it's Roger Sterling. I'm basically Paul Kinsey.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, I have very limited actual talent. I'm being totally passed up by people at work who are far younger and far more talented than I am. And
my beard is stupid.
My beard is stupid. I got rid of the beard, actually, but my beard is stupid. And
it was stupid.
I like wearing sweaters. I would totally go on like a civil rights bus ride to the South only to impress some chick. for no other reason than that.
I'm surprised none of us are a Joan.
Well, Jacoby, I think Tom will back me up on this. You've got the curves down.
Sorry that I'm made like a real woman, okay?
I'm
not your stick-thin, anorexic model. I like whiskey and balls in my mouth.
And you like cracking people in the back of their head with a vase.
With a vase. Oh, I do that all the time. I should have said Joan.
There you go. I think with that, we can probably call it a night. we want to thank Fernelli for coming on and joining us in this complete and abject insanity. Once again, you can catch him frequently, blogging constantly at Blog 10, Foul Balls, Fan House, various other spots. We'll be sure to have him back. Tom, good to hear from you, bud.
Thanks for having me. I hope to be back soon.
Sounds good. Jacoby, have a good one.
You know what?
You too.
I want to come to Iowa City sometime this year for a game with you guys.
Hey, you name when and where, we'll be there.